Welcome to The Father's Heart with Tom Clark, better known as Papa Tom.
Good morning. This is Papa Tom with The Father's Heart Talk Show, and we're continuing our conversations today with Dr. Adam Carrington about the secret ballot and how there are protections in our election process to keep election integrity, one of which is the secret ballot. Not the only thing, but it's one very important part of it. And it's anything that we can do to help people overcome fear in the process of their voting, that their vote doesn't count or that some harm going to come to them if they find out who they voted for. Adam was sharing us a lot of, last time we talked to him, about the background of the secret ballot and how the history of voting was much different than I had conceived it to be in years past, but how we evolved as a country into creating a process that is not foolproof, but has a lot of the issues to protect election integrity, some of which got waylaid, if you will, during the aberration of the 2020 election because of COVID and what happened during that time period, that there were issues, not the least of which was an interference in the state's rights to the election process being held in the states and post-mortem, if you will, after the election, changing some of the ground rules. So let's start back with the premise of the secret ballot coming into place and then move forward to the 2020 election. Okay.
Right. And I would say one thing to support the secret ballot, even though it wasn't originally what was at least demanded by the founders, it certainly wasn't denied by them, is the idea that goes back to the Declaration of Independence, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their creator, by God, with certain inalienable rights, and the government exists to protect those rights, but to protect them through our consent. So voting is really the culmination of that logic of the Declaration of Independence, wherein we as equal human beings with equal natural rights seek to protect those natural rights through consenting by voting, consenting to how our government is going to operate, who is going to be exercising our power, and that we need to be able to do so in a way that is free of intimidation, free of corruption and fraud, and that the secret ballot therefore really is a way of realizing this, maybe even better than the original voting methods that started after the founding of our country were able to accomplish. Now, with 2020, I think some of the biggest issues that came into play there was twofold. One is the issue that as a response to the health concerns, a number of the normal rules for when ballots can be cast, the proofing of them, early voting, mail-in voting, all of these other things were changed. And they were changed not just by with some help of the federal government, they were changed by state officials that weren't lawmakers. They weren't the legislatures of the people.
Which is what the Constitution calls for. It has to be the legislation of the state.
Yeah.
It wasn't those people.
Yeah, exactly. The people's representatives should be making these decisions, and instead they were delegated to basically the bureaucracies of the states or of the national government, but a lot with the states. And I think that however well-intentioned or not well-intentioned these were, it created a concern that if those rules were being not followed perfectly, what about others? Mm-hmm. I think another problem was election workers were completely unprepared for the avalanche of early mail. So even if, regardless of what one thinks about claims of fraud or intentional miscounting, I'll compare two states for you. The states of Ohio and the state of Pennsylvania. They counted their votes very differently. The state of Pennsylvania, notoriously, President Trump was up by a lot of votes on election night, And then slowly the vote counts were changing in the direction of President now President Biden. Well, even if you don't believe there was any fraud, the reason for that that would be purely innocent is they counted all the Election Day votes on the day of, which were very Republican, and they counted the absentee or the early votes second, which were very Democrat. If you look at Ohio, Ohio counted their votes exactly the opposite. They counted their early votes first and their in-person votes the day of second. Joe Biden was up by 11 points in Ohio with 53% of the vote counted. He lost by 8. So a 19-point swing. If that wasn't fraud, though, it was because they were counting votes in the opposite direction. And I think the idea that the votes aren't being counted on the night of in a timely manner, regardless of what one thinks about the fraud claims, is going to undermine people's security in the system, confidence in the system, and needs to be tightened up regardless. In addition to having, I think, states that now are implementing voter ID laws that are re-restricting who and how people can vote early. I think those are all good things to try to react to really the chaos that resulted from 2020, mm-hmm. and that needs to be avoided in the future.
Oh, one of the reasons why I got interested in the secret ballot was because of the thought that I could perceive that there was a attempt subconsciously in the theater of the mind to cause people to be afraid that people would find out, maybe people in the government, maybe people in the bureaucracy would find out who you voted for. And with that knowledge could come some negative consequences to you. You could lose your job. Things could happen to you. A lot of that's portrayed subconsciously through the media, mainstream media. And I wanted to counteract that by thinking the secret ballot protects him. And the statistics behind that, you would be better off on this than I would, but what is the percentage of people who are eligible to vote that are not even registered to vote? You know that number?
I do not know the percentage off the top of my head, but it is more than it should be. And you know, 2020, we actually had an amazing percentage of the population vote. It was the highest it's been in a long time, and 2016 was higher than 2012, and so forth. There are too many people who either out of just being disconnected from the political process, not taking seriously their citizenship, or as you said, certain fears of what participating in the political process would mean for their lives and livelihoods and comforts and other things, have cut themselves off from the political process that they have every right, and I would even add a duty, to be participants in. And I would just say to some of the fears you mentioned, certainly you are allowed to express who you voted for. And that's every bit your right, every bit you're part of your free speech, and every bit to advocate for why you did so.
Sure.
But unless you reveal it,
right.
It is exceedingly hard for someone to figure out who you voted for, given the election procedures that we have. And in fact, this is part of the downside on the other side of confirming who voted, is the problem that the secret ballot, we have emphasized making sure that no one can really know who voted after a certain step in the process, to protect their secrecy, which then makes it, you know, possibly hard to trace if you're not careful at that first step of the process. But no, the vote can be between you and God, as far as what you did, in a pretty secure way, with very few circumstances, with some caveats, some exceptions. But most of the way people find out how someone voted is them announcing it, or letting it slip, or doing something along those lines.
That's why the secret ballot protects our privacy, but we can exercise our own individual rights to say who we voted for, as you said. The other part was the problem with audits, because you can't audit back Because they don't know who you voted for. The audit doesn't tell you whether somebody voted for somebody or somebody else. Mm-hmm. Right? So the audits are limited in that sense.
Yeah, and one thing I would like to be done for security in the future is I do think certain states are also too dependent on electronic means. What if there is some sort of outage or cataclysmic event where those things get erased? And, you know, there are backups that are fairly standard now, but what I would like to see is every vote having a paper trail. And so that paper trail could also be counted and accommodated for and noted if some other circumstance called into question, if there was a glitch in the system or a break into the system, which is always, you know, hard but possible. Do we have an actual paper ballot that is recorded and that we can at least call upon if there's some sort of a dispute in the sure. future on these kinds of questions?
The other question is, you know, the changing of the votes. And personally, I am against the Dominion voting machines, not just because the Dominion voting machines, I think, changed the election, which I do believe happened, but more importantly, the whole internet is based upon a communication system. And the internet is based upon a communication system can easily be hacked. There's always a back door somewhere. Now we have the blockchain technology, which is a technology that's a secure system. And it's designed for security purposes, not just communication. So why don't we just change the methodology we use electronically from a communication system that can be hacked to a secure system that cannot be hacked, in terms of when we want to transmit that information, and then back it up by solid votes, as you said, the paper ballot. So I see those are potential improvements. Whether you believe in the Dominion voting machines cheated or not, that's my personal opinion, but aside from that, the whole system is systemically wrong or has problems built into it, that if you systemically changed it from a communication system to a secure system or blockchain technology, there would be a difference in that. And as you said, even that has electronic problems if it breaks down in some way. So to have the paper ballot backing it up helps secure the system.
And in some ways, there's a tension here, and both are good principles in general. One is to a system that emphasizes the ability of voting to be as easy as possible so that everyone can participate. They aren't blocked out of the system by its difficulty. But the other is security so it doesn't go too far.
Okay.
So that there isn't those. So I think bringing those in together does matter.
We'll be back in a moment with the good things. Bye. We're back with Dr. Adam Carrington, Associate Professor of Politics at Hillsdale College. And we were just discussing this dynamic tension that's almost like a paradox. It's not really a paradox, but there is a tension between two sides of something in the voting process, that we don't want to make it too difficult for people to vote. At the same time, we don't want to make it so easy that people vote multiple times and there's fraud involved on the other side. And so, Dr. Carrington, share with the audience your thoughts about that tension that exists.
Right. And underneath it is a deeper principle. We believe in two things. We believe in rule by the people. You could say democracy or republicanism. And that system or that emphasis really wants to make voting as easy as possible so that people who, you know, working class people with hard jobs that it's hard to get off work can vote, as opposed to just maybe more affluent people that it's easier to get out and go vote. You know, so the ease of voting is really the idea that we want as many legitimate people participating as possible. The other, though, is we believe that popular government must be conducted according to law, the rule of law. And the rule of law says that only those who are legally allowed to vote should be voting. And they should only be voting according to the rules by which those laws were set for voting. And therefore, there needs to be ways of making sure that vote is legitimate, secure, and putting certain protections. Mm. So balancing that is I think a lot of the debates that are at least in good faith, I mean, obviously, maybe not everyone's acting in good faith, but among those on the different sides that are acting in good faith, I think that's the tension. There are some people who think we have too many rules, and therefore people that whose lives are more challenging maybe are not given the opportunity to vote, or at least it's not as easy to vote as it should be for them. Mm-hmm. The other side is saying there aren't enough rules, or at least the following of the rules, to make sure that it's being done according to the rule of law. So I think that having a balance of those two is in line with our system of government and a question that we should be asking going into any and all future elections.
My understanding of the founding fathers creating the Constitution and our original documents was that government was supposed to be serving the people, not the people serving the government. And so he says the power of our country has been in we the people. So the power should exist with the people, right? And so we should be able to strike a balance in that tension if we focus on the fact that we the people are running the government or have the power. When that focus shifts, and instead of the government serving the people, there are people in the government that want the people to serve the government rather than the government serving the people, you know, in reverse, then you could manipulate the rules in such a way to influence the outcome. And so a lot of our conversations have to do with process, right? We want the process to be true and create integrity in the process, and then not trying to determine the outcome. But a lot of the rules that are imposed are rules imposed because they're trying to influence the outcome.
I think you pointed to a very important point that I really try to emphasize, not just about elections, but more generally in class. We spend a lot of time talking about procedures, but the procedures are meant to, they only exist to further substantive principles.
Right.
So the substantive principles are, again, what's found in the Declaration of Independence, that legitimate government is to protect the equal rights of the people who are empowering that government through their own consent. And therefore, any power that is exercised through the Constitution is not a power that originates with an office holder.
Correct.
A member of Congress, a right. president, anything else.
Right.
It originates with we the people. The beginning of the Constitution is a declaration about who rules ultimately in this country, at least humanly speaking. And therefore, we have to always be asking how or whether our procedures aren't just neat and tidy, but are they furthering that rule of the people, or are they undermining or thwarting? And anything that undermines or thwarts moves us toward a different system of government, an aristocracy, a monarchy, something like that. A
totalitarian government.
Right, right. These types of governments that the founders said are tyrannies that don't really fully operate on just principles. And so I think that is important to keep in mind, and to keep in mind why we have the procedures that we do, and then analyze them and reform them or maintain them in light of those principles, not let them take on a life of their own, which can then be like boiling a frog slowly. You can find yourself in danger by a movement of a process that was originally intended for good and is now being used for ill.
You just presented the real reason behind why people should vote. You said in the founding documents, it's the people that empower the government by voting people into office. So if you don't vote, you're forfeiting your right to empower the people, or empower the leaders, if you will, the elected officials. You're taking away, you're not empowering the government to do what it's supposed to do if you don't vote. You're forfeiting that right.
And that's going back to what we were saying in the first segment, why education is so important. Because whoever is the ruler in a country, whether it's a king or a few elites or the people in general, a good government must have virtuous rulers. And virtuous in intellect, they need to be wise, and virtuous in heart, they need to be formed in their dispositions around the good and the true. And therefore, education matters so much on this, because it's not just that we need people to vote. We need them to be informed voters. We need them to be virtuous voters who are wise as serpents and innocent as doves, to therefore root out corruption, root out attempts to undermine popular government, but also not themselves be underminers of it by rash or improper choices, but exercise self-government that begins with the well-governing of their own souls, that then extends to the full flowering of governing for the self in who you vote for and, mm-hmm. and who your leaders are.
You know, it strikes me that as you begin to say this, that our country has really been influenced a lot of times through media to take action based upon our feelings instead of thinking it through. And so for education to happen, it's dealing with your mind. You're thinking it through, you know, whereas much of what presented to people is not thinking it through. They're influenced through their emotions, feelings, and they're not thinking it through. They're not being educated to think and process. They're reacting to something that's presented to them. And oftentimes in the theater of the mind, what's being presented to them has fear behind it. And that's why I wanted to take that away from people who are thinking that the secret ballot is one of the methods to say, don't be afraid of that. There's a methodology behind my thought process. I've come to discover there's somewhere between 20 to 30 million evangelical Christians, have defined themselves that way, who haven't even registered to vote. Right? Why do they not register to vote? Why are they not using their position as a citizen to empower the government to do what they believe is right? Why are they afraid? Not understanding that in education, if you register, you may put down that you're Republican or Democrat or independent or unaffiliated. If you put yourself as unaffiliated, they're clueless as to who you might vote for. But whether you register under any one of those categories, they still don't know when that ballot goes in that your name's not on it. So they don't know who you voted for. And that is a built-in protection. I'm trying to present all the good things that God has for us is to overcome fear. Is overcome fear so that we will take appropriate action. Appropriate decision. The ask here is that you take appropriate action to exercise the freedom that you have to vote. And we're not telling you to vote for it. It's exercise the freedom you have to vote. And then be committed enough to understand and to educate yourself onto which candidates are those people who support the values that you have. As you mentioned before, I think Washington said this, the Constitution doesn't work with an immoral people.
Yeah, I believe that was John Adams, actually.
John Adams,
yeah. And that said the Constitution was made for a moral and a religious people and wouldn't work for any other. He said that in 1798. And John Adams also said that governments can be based on three dispositions of the soul. It can be based on fear, and that's what despotisms are based off of, is fear.
Yes.
It can be based off honor, and that's not bad to be based off honor in the sense of wanting to be honorable.
Sure.
But ultimately, it's off virtue. Virtue is the ultimate, and I think it's virtue because the ultimate virtue is to bring in what you were saying religiously. That the sum of virtue really is to love God and love others. And if we understand what it means to properly love God and love others, then we will know how to be neighbors, citizens, and ultimately voters.
You know, I've seen it in scripture and it's seen in my own life that the Father's Heart Talk Show is all about encouraging people to experience the Father's Heart. And people who have the Father's Heart have, by very structure, virtue, because the father's heart is there to provide and to mentor. It's virtuous in terms of your disposition to people. And that's what we want to encourage on this show, that people would rise up and understand what God's heart is for them, that God loves them. And out of the love that God has for them, they then can proceed to love others. And how you love others in the context of virtue is take the steps that you know is for your neighbor's best interest. So with that, let's bring to closure our meeting with Dr. Adam Carrington. Thank you, Adam, for sharing us your insights today.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Welcome.